All right, hello everybody. Oh man, it's been a heck of a week, but we're here with Lennox and the Ham Shack. I want you to meet the host of our show, Russ, out there in Arkansas, K5TUX. Say hello to everybody, Russ.
Good evening, everyone, or good day, or good morning, whenever you happen to be listening to the podcast. This is Russ, K5TUX, up in north central Arkansas, and down in the bunker in east central Texas, here's Richard.
Actually, I feel more like a flea on a griddle right now. It was 105 degrees today, and you made me turn my air conditioner off, so I don't know what I'm going to do, but we will persevere. Okay, we've had a lot of stuff going on this week. I've got folks I've talked to and this, that, and other, and we got things up and running, and holy cow. So why don't we just get started with some of the feedback here. What you got on your plate over there, Russ?
Now, why do you always call me when you know I don't have anything in front of me?
Well, let me do this.
All right.
We will do it this way. I have one that I think was pointed at the other podcast, but hey, it can help over here. We'll go ahead and read it anyway. It says, "Hi, Richard. I really like your podcasts. It makes the drive to work from Salina to Richardson much more enjoyable. I like the idea of a live show and a round table. That's why we do a live show over here, and we need you folks to sign up for the round table discussion. I have a pretty good audio setup at the house and would like to participate." Now, he's offered to participate, and I sent him one back that said, show up, and we'll see what happens. "I like talking about the hobby, and it would also give me some podcast experience." And that's what all of y'all listening to us right now. If you show up in the live chat while we're recording, you're very liable to end up on air. We don't mind. We don't mind at all, because the more the merrier. It goes on. "May I say, too, that I like your attitude towards new hams. In a recent podcast, you talked about APRS and how some hams must feel left out of the hobby because they cannot get the latest and greatest hardware. I run APRS daily, but know it took me forever to get that dual band rig. I have always been on a budget as far as radio stuff goes, and being married 30 plus years to the same woman can tell you that every purchase has to be approved by the boss. And I feel for him because I have a similar situation. I think we lose a lot of young hams these days because, quite frankly, a lot of hams just don't seem to want to do the Elmer thing and help them out. It is a shame. I have been snubbed on HF more times than I can count trying to get in on a QSO with some of these big gun old timers that park on a frequency for hours on end. I was told one time that my low power signal was really messing up their QSO and that I should go away. Not exactly what I would call a hobby building and welcoming attitude. Anyway, my call sign is N0JRJ. I am a general class ham. I work in the telecom field, have a lot of PC and radio experience. I like portable emergency operations, digital modes, heck, I like it all. I love to share and teach, and I love to learn. Please let me know if I can help in any way. 73ZOM. And all the best, George N0JRJ. Now, the reason I brought that to y'all is because he makes a lot of good points, even though it may be pointed at the other show. You know, I keep talking about we need to foster and take care of these new guys when they come in and do our best to make them feel welcome. One of the episodes he was talking about was here locally, got a thing going on right now where some of the guys that have been around for years and can go throw down hundreds of dollars at the candy store up in Plano, decide they're going to make these public service events that where you have to have fairly expensive to put together stuff. And these new guys are not going to be able to afford that. And I've been fighting them over it and everything else. But like I said, if y'all show up, you have the capability. We'll put you in the chat room. We'll put you on a microphone. Shoot. We'll put you on video if we can get away with it. So, Russ, do you have anything to say on that one?
Well, George in 0JRJ sounds a lot like me. He's got the same profession. He's got the same general aptitude for amateur radio, I think. And I think we're all in the same boat when it comes to buying hardware, except for those of us who are independently wealthy, or those of you, I should say, that are independently wealthy, because I can't include myself in that. Unfortunately, I'm sort of one for the instant gratification, so I like all the prepackaged rigs with all the cool stuff in them, but I can't afford that, so right now I've got a couple that are sitting behind me on the floor, not even plugged in, because I don't know what's wrong with them, and glad he wrote in. He had a couple of great points in there, and it's always nice to have another listener. So thanks, George, and continue to listen to the podcast, and if you come in with a microphone, we'll definitely try and get you on the air.
I'm going to see how things work out. I may do an experimental resonant frequency live tomorrow night. We'll see what happens. Okay, so what have you got, Russ?
Well, I'll start with something simple. We got another donation, our third donation to the podcast.
Yay.
Yeah. This one comes from Walter, and his call sign's KV6M. And we just want to put that out there that we got another donation, and want to thank Walter for sending the money on in. And like we always say, once we find something useful to do with the podcast, we will reinvest those funds and make your listening and viewing experience better. And I think one of the first things that money is going to go towards is a new webcam for me, so I can actually get back on the video.
He'd been breaking his equipment. I told him to make applesauce, not camera sauce. Well, thank you, KV6M, and you are the hero of the week at Linux in the Ham Shack. Okay, so the next one we got comes out of the forums over at blacksparrowmedia.com. This comes from Rodzilla, who did not sign with a name or call sign. Russ and I have been debating this a little bit, but let me go ahead and read it to you. It says, "Hello, I'm a longtime Linux user, computer geek, and will soon, I hope, get my technician license." Oh, okay, he doesn't have his call sign yet. I should pay attention. "When I take my test in early August, I am currently getting my rig together. I've purchased an Astron RS-20, good power supply, I've got one, and I'm leaning towards, as well as ham friends pointing me towards, a Yaesu FT-8800 as my first radio. I'm going to be primarily using it in the house, but also in my truck at times. Hope to get another radio later on, so I don't have to keep moving it to and from the house vehicle." And that's a good idea, because it can sure be a pain moving radios around. "I like the FT-8800 as it's almost like having two radios in one, letting you listen in on two frequencies at the same time. The crossband repeating will also come in handy later. I have not found where Hamlib, G-Rig, etc. support the FT-8800. Does anyone else know if support is coming or how I could help once I get my radio? I'm also going to purchase the programming software and data cable for the radio. I do have a Windows partition for the occasion when Wine isn't up to the task. Has anyone had any success with the RT programming Windows software running under Linux?" Okay, so Rodzilla, first of all, I went out and did some research. Went and looked around. I wasn't familiar with the FT-8800. I've never been a Yaesu kind of guy. I do have a Yaesu HF rig now, but for the most part, I really haven't used them much. So I went and checked into it, and it seems that particular radio, being a VHF, UHF, dual band radio, FM only, you may have a hard time finding rig control software for it, because even though there are VHF, UHF, dual band, FM radios that do have rig control, it's not supported in a lot of radios. And I'm going to say that because that's the way it came down as far as my research. Now, Russ has some different information. We'll get to that in just a second. As far as it being a good radio, the crossband being helpful, all this other stuff, you betcha it's going to be a good radio. And if you can afford to jump into a dual bander right out of the gate, good going. Go to it. But let's see. I'm sure Russ has got a few things to say, and that'll give me a chance to organize my thoughts. I have them over here on index cards. Go ahead, Russ.
I was actually looking at picking up the FT-880 or 8800 for myself. I think that's one of the dual banders that has the removable faceplate, or where the head unit disassembles from the main body. I've got a couple of FM dual banders, but I wanted to get one of those because they're easier to mount, and Some of them even have, I think it's like 18 or 20 foot cords between the head unit and the main case. It lets you put them anywhere, which is really cool. As far as the cabling for rig control, there is a data cable for the FT8800s and a lot of the FM Yaesu rigs, but it looks like they are only for programming and for syncing memory across rigs. I couldn't find anything that actually said you could use rig control with it, and I'm not sure that there's any documentation that says it's supported in Hamlib or even under Windows rig control. I was under the impression that my Kenwood has, it's an FM dual bander, and I was under the impression that it has rig control. I could be wrong about that, and it definitely does not look like the FT8800 does. It looks like there is potential for rig control at some point because there is data connectivity with the unit. But whether Yaesu or anyone else is going to put out software to actually do computer controlling of the radio is anyone's guess.
That's the whole deal. Make sure you can find out everything you can about it. Go ahead and get the one that works best for you. As far as rig control, you're really not going to be able to use that driving down the road anyway. And as far as programming, you're going to use a totally different set of software for that anyway. So we got through that pretty well. So what else you got, Russ?
Well, there were a couple of comments posted to the Linux in the Ham Shack website over the past few days, one of which was a post by K6-something, because he asterisked out his call sign, I guess so the web spiders wouldn't, overtake him. He gives us step-by-step instructions on how to compile FLDigi under a 64-bit system for anybody who that might be useful for. If you're running a 64-bit OS version of Ubuntu or Red Hat or any of those, you can use that, and that's a pretty helpful tip. His explanation is for Ubuntu specifically, but it should match up for most other Linux distributions. And there was another comment on the site that I didn't actually publish because I didn't understand where it came from, but I'm going to read it just so that if the person who actually sent the post in could clarify what they're talking about and or repost a comment to the website, I'd be happy to publish it. The comment says, you need to add libsamplerate0-dev to part 2, and that's all it says, so I'm not sure what they're referring to, what he's referring to, whether that has something to do with compiling FLDigi for x64 systems or if it's something entirely different. So if that's you, please email us back or repost the comment and I will definitely get that out there. But as I don't understand what the point is, I'm not going to approve it at this time.
Yes, I was looking at that also. And the first comment when it came in, I went ahead and snatched that up and posted it over at one of the other websites. There was something left out. I'd appreciate it if we could make sure that we could get our hands on that and make sure it's in there. So, yes, please get back in touch with us. And if you could clarify that just a little bit, we would appreciate it very much. Okay. And next up, I got a Google alert from a ham site or a website this past week. Wanted to go over and let y'all know about it. We got a nice mention from the Princeton Ham Radio Club. Turns out that they put a short article about Linux and Ham Shack up over there with the URL to the website. Princeton Ham Radio Club is located in Princeton, Kentucky. So we'd like to say hello to the folks out there in Kentucky. We're glad y'all are listening to us, and we hope that we're turning out to be a good resource for you and your club members. And don't be afraid to make copies and pass us around. Tell everybody about us. Put us on your blogs. Well, you already put us on your blog. What do you think about the Princeton Ham Club putting us up, Russ?
Thanks very much to the Princeton Ham Radio Club. I thought you were going to say Princeton, New Jersey. I didn't even know there was a Princeton, Kentucky. But all right, we're live in Kentucky, or live to tape in Kentucky, or something like that.
And believe it or not, there's even a Princeton, Texas. Princeton, Texas. Yep, the grand total of about 400 people out there. And it's in the middle of nowhere. But there is a Princeton, Texas. I haven't run across Flippin, Texas yet, but I'm going to keep trying. So what else have you got, Russ?
The only other thing I've got is we have been listed on Zune.net. So for all of those people out there who have a Zune and want to subscribe to our podcast, you can do that now at Zune.net. If you go to Zune.net or, no, it looks like social.zune.net, do a search for Linux in the Ham Shack, it'll come up and give you a link to the RSS feed so you can download it to your Zune if anybody's out there using one of those Microsoft gizmos.
We're going to have to break y'all of that. We're even going to get y'all on some Sansa clips. You know, the fact of the matter is you can even download an iPod on Linux now, so they ain't no reason. No reason whatsoever. Okay, well, we've pretty much gone through the feedback, I believe, unless you've got anything else over there, Russ.
Let's wrap up this segment. I'm glad we didn't go as long on the feedback this time as we did last time. Boy, we really tore it up last time.
We'll tell you about our exploits right after this.
Look around at the world we share. Too fast are the lives we bear. Well, it's enough to drive us both insane. Nothing's new in the soul rat race. And it's time for a slower pace. So let's get on out of this ain't a day. Come with me to San Jose. Take a little ride on the southbound plane. You and I, we're still awake. It's alright, it's okay. Both of us have been on the go. Everyone wants a little bit more, but we need a little time just for ourselves. Go forget about all your cares. Have a day and we'll be there. Lay it low down in my heart, Mexico.
We told you we were going to tell you about our exploits, so here we go. Y'all make sure you send an email or two in. Let Russ tell him, you know, let Russ know y'all appreciate the music that he picks out for the show. I don't have anything to do with that. Y'all, if y'all have listened to the other show, you hear where my taste takes us. This past weekend, I fell in with a rough and tumble bunch. I got hung up with the Linux Cranks, and they're a bunch of good guys. They really are. And they were recording both shows on Saturday night, and I was in there with them, working back and forth in the chat room. If anybody's listening to us from over there at Linux Cranks, I want y'all to stay clear of the monorail. Stay clear of the monorail. And almost ended up on the Linux Crank show. In fact, I've been invited this coming weekend if I can make my stuff work. So y'all check that out. We do have a link to the Linux Cranks podcast, Ogcast, over at the website. So y'all go over there and give it a click. It's like I said before, number one, it's not family friendly, and number two, it is an Og format. But if you're using Linux and you have an iPod, it'll change it into MP3 for you. So there's some incentive. Number two, Russ and I have been asked to do a couple segments for Hacker Public Radio. Now, for those of y'all that have been listening to Linux-related podcasts for a while, I'm sure that y'all have come across Hacker Public Radio. They have some really outstanding shows over there. I've been listening to them more and more, and I'm learning so much. My head's swelling up. My hat barely fits anymore. Any comments on Linux Cranks or Hacker Public Radio, Russ?
Your head's swelling up. That has to do with information, does it? There's no other reason? No ego issues, nothing like that?
No, my ego's kind of deflated right now.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, I'm excited to hear about that. I guess you sprung it on me just before the podcast, so this is my first, second introduction to the fact that we'll be doing those segments on Hacker Public Radio. That's really cool. Hopefully one of these days you'll give me some information like what exactly we're going to be doing.
Well, I will get to that. Just be patient, little Russ. Be patient.
If you learn nothing else, you should know I'm not patient.
We'll get that taken care of. They just want us to do some generalized stuff concerning Linux and amateur radio. I made the comment today on the IRC channel about Linux falls in line pretty much with the amateur radio philosophy, and it pretty much does. Boy, I hate to say this because I sound like an old-timer. When you get past the cell phone generation, you find that they both pretty much coincide as far as philosophy. Yeah, they requested we drop a couple little episodes on them, a couple little segments. We are going to be involved with a podcast or a podcast network that has over 400 episodes out at this time. 400 episodes. Holy mackerel. Of course, they put out two or three a week.
I thought we were doing good to get to 18. Hey, I'm slacking most of the time, so
we're doing great because we haven't done an infomercial yet.
No, the Hacker Public Radio thing definitely sounds like a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, buddy. We're being embraced by the Linux community, and that's great. I'm just hoping we're getting the same acceptance in the amateur radio community. We just don't get as much input from that side. But that's okay because we know y'all love us because we love y'all.
One of these days I'm going to have to fire up IRC. That's one of the things that getting started in computers way back when and all the way up through the ranks, I did it pretty much all. I did, Gopher and Telnet and Usenet and everything you can think of when it comes to networking and computers, but I never got into IRC.
I'm making my first real run at it myself.
And by the way, XIRC is a great IRC client. I guess I'll just throw that in there. It's in the repositories. Right. Everybody, go ahead and download it if you're into IRC.
Everybody, use your suppositories now. Oh, Russ just cut me out again.
No, I'm going to leave that one in because you're...
Oh, no, I'm going to get us an explicit tag if I ain't careful. Okay, let's move on to something else. You got anything else as far as announcements and stuff for us?
No. I'll let you keep the limelight for this episode. I got nothing.
Okay, well, we're going to do this. This is the crusty old ham segment of the program. We keep running up on it because there's always something that's irritating me. And, I get along with most everybody that emails me and Twitters me and dents me. I understand that's a word now because I am on Identica, even though I'm kind of quiet over there. But I did receive a tweet from... M0GLJ Craig and I want to read this, and then I want to explain something when I get finished. It says, "Hi, Richard, KB5JBV. I just signed up for the next generation of telecom provider, and I think you should check it out." And I'm not going to give the damn URL. "You can talk to people for free with your cell phone." Holy cow. "And you don't need to go to the computer for calling, as you can call directly from your cell phone with mobile application they provide. They support over 2,500 cell phones, so I am sure they support your cell phone too. To participate in the WCell revolution, sign up now. For everybody within the sound of my voice." And I've gone and checked GLG's Twitter account. He normally tweets about ham radio related topics. "Do not send spam to me and Russ. We don't need it. We got plenty. If we don't have plenty, we can generate our own. In the case of Richard," and I'm not sure what Russ's policy is on this, "if I receive a piece of spam from somebody on Twitter, they end up receiving the banned hammer. So, if you want to follow us, I really appreciate it on my side. I really do. But if you send me junk, I'm going to unfollow you." And that's about all I can say, because I done got aggravated.
Yeah, if you keep it to yourself, I don't have to put the red flag on the podcast.
So, how do you feel about that, Russ?
Yeah. Spam is a sore subject for me, because I'm a sysadmin for an internet service provider, and one of the things I do probably half of my day is deal with spam, and that's spam that's not even directed to me. That's everybody else's. And then, of course, when I get my own, it's all pretty aggravating. Usually, I do a little investigation when it comes to spam. I don't just cut people off, swing the banned hammer, and throw them into the bit bucket right away. Usually in a Twitter account, when it's a spammer, it's pretty clear. When it's just a one-time thing, I don't usually get too uppity about it the first time around. You know, because every once in a while, an exploit will come out and somebody's MySpace account will get compromised, or their Twitter account will get used to spam, and it really had nothing to do with them. So I have a little leeway in there. But yes, if I get a bunch of spam, or even, you know, more than one, say, from any one person, yeah, they're gone. I do appreciate every Twitter follower, and the reason is I like to be able to provide the information that everyone needs, especially when it comes to the podcast, because we want everyone out there to know when things are happening and when they can download and listen. And it's always good to get the feedback, whether it be Twitter or any of the other methods. So we'd like to keep those channels open and as clear as possible. And, you know, spam just makes it harder to get through a normal day. Try not to spam us. We're definitely not going to spam you. I think that pretty much echoes your statement, and I'll just shut up now, because we don't want to turn this into Russ and Richard's rant session.
Russ and Richard's rant and roll show. All righty. Well, I'll tell you what. I had one guy. He followed me one day, and I went ahead and followed him back. And later that day, he sent me 35 auction announcements through Twitter for amateur radio-related gear. 35. Boy, howdy. He was out of there in a heartbeat. I sent him a message back that said, "If I wanted spam, I'd open my email client. Banhammer, click." And he spent 3 days trying to get me to follow him again. But we don't try to sell you the patented Armadillo brand old beat up housewife stretch mark recycler, and we do sell those, so we really don't want y'all to be pushing your spam on us. Now, if you got something amateur radio related, cool. Alrighty, next up on our plate, now that we've run off half our listeners, is the article I received a URL for an article this past week over on ZDNet. And for those of y'all who be hunting for it and maybe want to follow along, it's at http://education.zdnet.com question P-2770. name of the article was Windows 7 is the same as Ubuntu. I got to reading this, and it wasn't so much as the guy was saying that Windows 7 and Ubuntu were a whole lot alike. His point in the article was pretty much that nowadays, operating systems, where there was a big gap in the past between Linux and Windows and some of the others, there's really not that gap anymore. And in fact, from what little I've seen, if there's a gap, Macs are out in the lead as far as look and feel. I've never actually used one, so I couldn't tell you how they perform. However, he's talking about his 17-year-old who's been using a Linux machine for a while and that kind of stuff, and he downloaded a copy of Windows 7, the release candidate, and ran it for his son for a while, and the kid, with the basic bare-bones stuff that he does, what your average computer user does, he really couldn't tell the difference between Windows 7 and Ubuntu, other than the fact he wanted the Ubuntu back because he preferred it. Take some time to read this article if you get a chance. What do you think about him? I know you haven't had time to read the whole thing, Russ, but what are your thoughts so far?
Well, I, for one, tend to agree with the article. I've looked at Windows 7, and of course I've spent a long time looking at Ubuntu and Debian and Linux Mint most recently. And as far as look and feel, if that's what the article is really getting into, and it actually talks about some of the applications as well, not just how things look, but fundamentally their usability is almost exactly the same. The point-and-click environment, and while the window decorations and things like that may look a little different, there's really nothing to prevent an average user from going from Ubuntu to Windows 7 or even Windows Vista, perish the thought. But when it comes to, you said something about macOS being the leader in the look and feel department. I'm not so sure about that. I think Linux with Compass Fusion running is probably the easiest and coolest looking of the distributions out there. macOS definitely comes in close, and Windows tries real hard, but I'm not sure that they do a lot of stuff that uses a lot of video processing power, but I'm not sure it has the wow factor that things like Compass Fusion do. I've recently gotten stuff to work on Mac OS X, like using desktop areas and some of the things that look like Compass Fusion as far as moving windows around and like the Genie effects and things like that. In all of those ways, they look similar, and I actually haven't tried to set that kind of stuff up in Windows 7, so I think Linux is ahead in the look and feel department right now, with Mac OS X coming up a close second and then Windows, lagging behind. But definitely from a functionality perspective, they're all very, very similar these days. And in fact, right now I'm using a Mac Mini, which, I'm doing the recording on and all of that stuff. All it is just the box, and of course it's an Intel architecture inside. So aside from the fact that it's BSD underneath and looks like Mac's Aqua operating or Mac's Aqua desktop environment on top, I'm actually using, a Windows keyboard, a Windows trackball, and a stock monitor. So there's nothing to differentiate this from a PC, really, or another machine running Linux. So all of that stuff is sort of migrating together and converging into a very similar experience, a similar user experience for anyone who comes to any of the operating systems.
Yes, Compass Fusion. I love my Compass Fusion. I really love my Compass. And I've only got one machine that I've got it on, because I'd never get anything done if I had it on other machines. But the only reason I say that about the Macs is I've only seen them in passing. I've never had my hands on one. But you may very well be correct. I would not dispute you, because I'm afraid of you.
You're not afraid of me.
Yes, I am.
No, you live too far away.
You're a scary guy.
Well, thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Just remember, some people deserve a good killing, and I don't want it to be me.
And speaking of spam, I got my first scam email from Craigslist today. I was so excited.
Naked, recycled stretch marks? What?
Oh, no, nothing as sexy as that. They just wanted it was one of those ones where they want to buy your thing. They don't tell you who they are, and they want to send you a certified check and la, 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 and tell you, that kind of deal.
every time I tell them, send me my money, they never answer back.
Yeah, anyway. funny how that works. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. All right. So, once again, y'all take a little time to go read this pretty interesting little article, and it makes a good point. In fact, if I thought I could get away with posting it, I'd post it on one of our 18,000 websites. Well, it looks to me like the first segment went a little long. This one is going about average. You think everybody's about ready for one more break, Russ?
I think we can throw one more out there. Gives people something to tap their toes to for a couple of minutes, and we'll come back with some more juicy stuff on the other end.
Yeah, when we get back, we'll tell you some more stuff you'll never be able to use. We'll be right back.
Stumbled upon a little different kind of person. And Tuesdays were our days, just one night a week, and we were bored with the others and no secrets left to keep. And that uncertain Thursday, where I could finally be, and all my invitations sent in my own philosophy. Call me crazy while I'm shining, I call it unbelievable timing. Now I finally found another me, another me, another me. Another me, another me, another me. So now we share every day. How differently everything, with a little help, with a little help from inevitability. In that uncertain Thursday, where I could finally be, with all my invitations and in my own philosophy. Call me crazy while I'm shining, I call it unbelievable timing. How I finally found another me, another me, another me. Another me, another me, another me. Oh, wasn't me, didn't know about you. I opened my mouth to be true, and into our time we flew. I found while I wasn't looking. So I stumbled upon a little different kind of person. And that uncertain Thursday, where I could finally be, with all my invitations and in my own philosophy. Call me crazy while I'm shining, I call it unbelievable timing. How I finally found another me, another me, another me. Another me, another me, another me. Another me, another me, another me, another me, another me, another me.
Okay, we're in a home stretch, folks. I was considering today, I was looking around the web and checking a few things out, trying to keep things in the theme of how we can pull the computers and the radios together, and it dawned on me that one of the things we use as amateur radio operators more than anything else, well, after radios for sure, is the browser on our computer. And for the most part, the majority of us use something like Firefox. then I got to digging a little more, and I found out that there's a few useful tools out there for Firefox that can be added as add-ons, search engines, that kind of stuff. And, you know, we probably not going to be talking about a long segment here, but we did find, I did find some stuff that fairly useful. You know, recently Firefox 3.5 came out. It hasn't hit the repositories yet, to my not as a branded Firefox product. You can install it as a browser, which I believe doesn't have any branding attached to it and that kind of stuff. But we're not going to get off on that. We're going to talk a little bit about some plugins you can go out there and find. The first and most important thing that we normally do with our browser is go hunt somebody down. We want to know what their address is, what their QSL information is, so we can send them a card or put them in Logbook of the World or whatever. For a long time, you've been able to get search engine add-ons for Firefox. Now, when Firefox upgrades, some of them quit working. But as I was looking around today, there's currently call sign search engine add-ons for the 3.0 edition of Firefox for the ARRL QRZ. And there's one from AE7Q who has several things going over there. It's a really big, if you're really interested in amateur radio licensing statistics, you know, new licenses, old licenses, who has what kind of call, that kind of stuff. I mean, there's a really, it's got more information on licensing than you could ever imagine. But, you can go download these things, and I'm hoping I still got my hands on them the way I'm supposed to. Well, let's go over to AE7Q's site. Now, AE7Q's site, when you first go over there, you're gonna see a bunch of statistics on the front page. But if you'll take a little time and look around, you'll find that he's got a few notes on some applications he's used and that kind of stuff. Some information on Part 97, Part 15, Part 1, Part 2 of Title 47. You know, the FCC rules we go under, and we can't just say Part 97 because we're affected by some of the other sections also. But you can also go look around, and when you get back in there, I'm starting with him because he's got more than one little add-on. He has a search engine add-on that you can use. When you go in there and type in a call sign, especially if you don't put too many B's in it, it goes ahead and pulls information from what appears to be the ULS system. For those of you who don't know what the ULS system is, it's the system that the FCC uses to keep track of the information concerning your amateur radio license. And it even pulls down information from the pre-ULS system, because ULS has only been in effect for, I believe, it's only been about 10 years. So when I put in my call sign, not only do I pull up my current license information, my name, what type of applicant I am, what my operator class is, region, whether it's active or not, I pull up the grant date, the effective date, and the expiration date. And if it were canceled for some reason, if I passed away and it got canceled, that would be there. If I was bad and they took it away from me, that would be there. But I also pull up the pre-ULS information, which even shows my original technician license date, which I was licensed about 9 months earlier as a novice. So if y'all decide to go over and check it out, then there you go. Now you can pick this up. It goes in just like any other add-on, any other search engine add-on in Firefox. But also AE7Q has one for taking a look at grid squares, which is a useful item that I had not run across before for Firefox. And you type in the grid square, and it will show you the grid square on a Google map in your browser. Now, this could become important if you want to know where somebody's located, that kind of stuff. It's city level when it opens up, but you can expand on out just like you can with any Google map. It gives you all the regular stuff, and it will show you all the streets and stuff like that in that particular grid square. We'll move over to the Mozilla developer org, which is where we were getting our search engine plugins from. Over there, you'll be able to locate the ARRL call sign plugin you'll be able to locate the QRZ plugin. And in fact, there's about three different variations on the QRZ plugin. I'm still running the original one because I keep moving my profiles around, and I normally move them from an older copy of Firefox to a newer copy of Firefox on a different machine, so they never actually get dumped out and they continue to work. But I noticed today that there's about four variations on these particular search engine add-ons. Everybody's got one that's a little different. Some of them work, some of them don't work, because they're designed for older versions. Also, we have add-ons for the ARRL call sign database. Now, the ARRL call sign database is going to be pretty much like the one we looked at over at AE7Q's website. It shows pretty much the same information without the older stuff. It pulls the database information from the FCC, but only from the ULS system, and will give you name, address, call sign, license class, all that good stuff, FRN number, and that kind of stuff. Now, one of the reasons I was able to find a lot of this stuff today is because, and I don't talk about the league very often, so y'all listen to me close, there's a lot of information on the league website that you can't get at if you're not a league member, and it's really good information. So you might at least want to go over to your friend's house who is a league member and take a look, because I know for sure I was looking at a generator design. It's a lawnmower engine and a car alternator that is on over there, that's in a PDF file, but you can't get at that PDF file unless you're a member. I'm not going to beat the league to death, because that's not what we're about here or at the other show. Now, we're going to go over to n0hr.com. n0hr.com, he's had a couple of plugins for several years. One is called PropFire. PropFire is a propagation program, which is also, believe it or not, a Firefox plugin. And it is supposed to be able to give you information on, you know, your solar numbers, whether it's active, if there's problems going on, you know, just general space weather type stuff. But instead of having to go to a website and stuff, it is a Firefox plugin. They also have another one over there, one called PropStats. Now, PropStats takes you to the website so that you can get the information off of it. If any of y'all have been to the Resonant Frequency blog page where we post the Resonant Frequency program, then you see something that is similar to PropStats, but it's from a different service. So this is another one that y'all can add to your Firefox plugins. Last but not least, I want to talk about VA3STL's web blog. I found a page over there which lists a lot of these things. And that reminds me, now that I'm seeing it, there's also out there a plugin called Ham Info Bar, and there is one called Ham Links Toolbar from N0HR, where we just were. I have not had any success with Ham Links Toolbar. You can get it installed, but it doesn't give me any information. Ham Info Toolbar, on the other hand, I was able to get installed, have taken a look at it, and there is a lot of useful information that is already in this toolbar, and you can add links as you need them when you need them. It'll show you different locations you can go to concerning space and radio. It'll allow you to add RSS feeds, even allow you to check your mail from the toolbar. Now, I don't normally like adding a lot of toolbars to Firefox, simply because I like that real estate. I want the room. I want to be able to put my stuff where I want to open 18 windows at once and be able to see them all. So that's why I don't normally do toolbars. But for those of you out there that use them, wonderful. Now, I'm going to say this, and for those of y'all who have accused us of being window haters, most of these plugins are available for Internet Explorer. Now, I'm going to say that, and I'm going to attach, but why would you use Internet Explorer If you are using Internet Explorer, then that's your own fault. Russ, do you have anything to add, or have I put you to sleep again?
If you are using Internet Explorer, that is definitely your own fault. I have, we actually have put in place a policy at work, and I probably shouldn't bring this up, but I'm going to anyway, where we will uninstall IE8 because you can't even begin to imagine all of the things that IE8 breaks. But if you can't imagine it, just, you know, sit down and think about it for a while, and everything you can imagine that would break, it's broken. And Microsoft has had the forethought to make IE8 a critical update, so that all of you who automatically do updates on your PCs have IE8, and I'm sorry. I had a couple of things on interesting 3D plugins for Firefox. I don't know if that's useful or not. Do you want me to go for that? Or I don't have any really comments on the ham radio ones. You've covered all the ones I was familiar with.
Well, go ahead and stick them on in there, because that'll help us beef up the program.
I just wanted to mention a couple of interesting plugins for Firefox that don't do anything really to add functionality to the browser, but what they do is create cool 3D effects, and since everything is kind of going 3D these days, I want to mention these things. The first one is a plugin called FoxTab. What that does is it basically takes all of your tab browsing and it can spread it out onto your screen in a 3D way, which is highly customizable. You can create a big curved wall of all of your tabs. You can create a sort of Rolodex index. You can make a circular index. And all of this is in 3D space and customizable and has a keystroke functionality and mouse functionality that allows you to spin through your various tabs. And in most cases, you'll be able to see all of your tabs all at once, so you can go directly to a page, or you can cycle through if you have so many that you can't see them all. So for that, definitely check out FoxTab. And then there's another similar plugin called Cool Iris, which basically does a lot of what FoxTab does, but it does it for pictures. If you're doing picture browsing, picture searching, or anything like that on the web, it will create a giant three-dimensional wall of images that allows you to easily browse through and scan different pictures, and definitely both eye candy stuff, a lot of fun, and definitely gives you the wow factor when you're browsing the web. So definitely cool add-ons, FoxTab and Cool Iris, COOLIRIS, if that wasn't too clear.
For Iris I ever met was kind of cool.
And I have another topic that I'd like to talk about briefly that has nothing to do with amateur radio, but it has to do with Linux, and I think I've mentioned it once before. In a couple of previous podcasts, I mentioned someone mentioned it to us, I believe, and then I mentioned it a couple of times, an application called Synergy. Have you seen Synergy?
I've heard of it. Larry turned me on to it over at Going Linux.
Well, it's officially now called Synergy 2. You can find it at synergy2.sourceforge.net. At first glance, it doesn't look like it does very much, but it is a very, very handy application. What Synergy allows you to do is if you have two or more computers on your desktop or on multiple desktops, it allows you to share a single mouse and keyboard between all of those machines. Now you think, well, a KVM can do that too, but this does it all in software. It's also cross-platform. It will work on Windows, it'll work on Mac OS X, and it will work under Linux. It's a really cool thing because, like, at work, I have a PC that has three video screens, and next to that, I have an iMac. A 20-inch iMac. So what I've done is I've installed the Synergy server on the Linux machine, so I'm sharing its keyboard and mouse, and then I have the Synergy client running on Mac OS X, and what happens is all four of the screens I have basically in a semicircle around me on my desk, and when you move the mouse, it will scroll across one screen, the second screen, the third screen, and then straight off the edge of the third screen on the PC and right over to the Macintosh, just as if they were all one computer. It's transparent to the user that you're scrolling between multiple machines, and the only thing it requires is that you have a port open and network connectivity between the computers, because they do talk client-server in order to get this to work. But it works pretty seamless, and it's incredibly useful. It's a little hard to set up because they don't provide you with startup scripts under Linux. You have to either start it up by hand or make yourself a little init script so it will start up when your computer starts up. I found a great utility. Under Windows, of course, it will do that automatically. You just install it, and you can tell it that you want the client to start up or the server to start up, whichever one you're using, when the computer boots up. And then I found another application called, there's several. There's one called Quick Synergy. There's one called Mac OS X Synergy GUI. What these do is they're both for Mac OS X, and they are a GUI front end for Synergy that allows you to start it up automatically at boot time. And also gives you an easier interface, so you don't actually have to type out the command line for Synergy. But there's actually a better one called Synergy KM. This is the one I've found the easiest to configure and the most useful, and it actually sits up in your Mac OS X taskbar so that you can actually see Synergy when it's running. It's not down in the dock, it's actually up in the bar. And I find that really useful. So if you want a GUI interface for Synergy, use Synergy KM. Just do a Google search for that. So I just wanted to let everybody know about Synergy. It's an amazing thing. It's really cool, especially for the total geek factor, when you can watch your mouse zip back and forth between computers seamlessly and effortlessly, and use your one keyboard to type on any machines that you have on your desktop. Cool product there, and the guys who I didn't bother to look up who actually wrote it and who's developing it, but kudos to them.
Well, I've been looking into that myself. I have far too many KVM switches around here, but you know, Russ was giving a description of his computers over there and stuff, and I imagine he's probably sitting over there with his pinky ring on, stroking his kitty cat, waiting for Mr. Bond to show up, because I think he's fixing to try and take over the world.
I need to put up a picture of that my displays at work, but I actually just installed Synergy at home here tonight. That was the reason why I was a couple minutes late, because remember, I've been complaining over the past couple of podcasts about the fact that I needed an extra monitor. Well, yes. I actually have an extra monitor. I have an LCD high definition TV that has a VGA input. Well, I finally took my Linux PC, plugged it into that, and plugged the DVI connector for my Mac Mini into the monitor, set up Synergy so that I'm sharing a single keyboard and mouse, and now I can just scroll from my monitor over to my TV and use the same keyboard and mouse with both PCs, and I can see them both at the same time. So I am a happy person.
Yes, we have far too many, peripherals. But I can see how that can really help. Yeah, Larry Bushy was talking about that. I send him an email. He sends me an email every once in a while, and I look forward to trying to get it going. Of course, we're way behind here. I've still got the video project going on, you know. Got the camera, have had the camera, finally got the FireWire card and everything else. But y'all keep hanging in there, because we're going to get the videos happening.
One final note on Synergy. If you're not using a GUI client, you have to enter the configuration yourself, especially on the server side. But the configuration syntax is extremely simple. There's an example file that comes in the packages you download from the repositories that tell you how to set up the server. It's, like I say, it's very, very simple. Once you get it set up, it's real easy to use. And by default, it uses port 24,800. So if you've got a firewall, you'll have to open up port 24,800 in order for Synergy to work. I think that was it. Just all the details on Synergy there. I've been so happy to use it. I mean, I didn't even use my iMac before Synergy, because I never bothered to turn it on, because I had to switch keyboard and mouse in order to use it. Now that I don't have to do that, it's on all the time, and I use it all the time.
Now, see, there you go. He was cussing it last week. you know, we were talking about making applesauce, and now he loves it. Well, I'm glad you're happy with it, though, Russ. Honestly, I wish I didn't have to have six or eight machines doing one or two jobs a piece around here.
But if you have Synergy, it'll be that much easier.
Yeah. I got to go up to the junk store and hunt me down some more monitors here in a few days. It's nice to be able to get 17-inch and bigger monitors at the junk store nowadays for $25. Ted wants to know if Synergy tweaks the GDM scripts.
I'm using the server side on Linux and the Mac OS X and Windows clients in order to share the Linux keyboard. And as far as I know, they do not tweak the GDM scripts at all. I use an init script to start up Synergy at boot time, and I don't mess with it beyond that. And as far as the GUI tools, if there is a GUI tool for Linux, I haven't played with it.
So with that, the flea on the griddle down here in Balt Springs, Texas is KB5JBV. You can follow me at Twitter. That is twitter.com/KB5JBV, or send me an email at KB5JBV@blacksparrowmedia.com, or visit the website. You can go on by there. That's lhsinfo.org, and it only took me one time to say it that time. Or come by the forums and leave us a message. We're always open over there at blacksparrowmedia.com. Just click on the forum link and go on over into the forums and scroll on down to Linux in the Ham Shack and let us know what you think. So I've given you lots and lots of information, but you know what? I bet you can hang on, because Russ has more.
That's right. I'm about to wrap up my side of the show, and I'm Russ, K5TUX. You can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JR Woodman. You can use JR Woodman to find me on all the other social networking sites out there, from Identica to FriendFeed to MySpace to Facebook to odnauseum.com. If you want to send me an email, send it to K5TUX@blacksparrowmedia.com. Richard told you about the forums. Post to the website, give us good feedback, and we'll answer all your questions and comments. And I am definitely going to be looking for a new webcam so I can get back on video. So if anybody out there is still listening this late in the podcast and has a good suggestion for a Linux-compatible webcam, send it my way. And I think that's going to wrap it up for me. From down between the peaks in the pine forest in north central Arkansas, this is Russ, K5TUX.
And a flea on the griddle somewhere in Texas, this is KB5JBV. We'll see y'all next time.